Hello, listeners. Welcome to another episode of The Circuit. I am Ben Beharin.
Greetings, programs. I'm Jay Goldberg.
So, today we are going to talk about the skyrocketing CapEx by the cloud hyperscalers. Anybody who listens to earnings lately has heard pretty ridiculous cloud hyperscaler CapEx growth. Everyone wants to talk about CapEx right now. What are you raising your CapEx to? Is so-and-so going to raise their CapEx? Because apparently this is now a trendy thing to talk about in terms of your spending on your moat and your competitive advantage. Now, obviously, we all know that the cost of GPUs is skyrocketing, and in order to do that, the cost of compute is going up in these infrastructure and the data center, and so because of that, they're buying on things. But just to share some nuggets so that kind of everybody can we can level set on the actual size of this increase we're talking about. I have this great note from Morgan Stanley and their cloud CapEx tracker, which, again, is an estimate. We don't actually know everybody's exact CapEx spendings, but they're using commentary triangulating to get a model. Essentially, what they're saying is 2024 is going to represent 44% growth year over year to 2023, adding roughly $50 billion of spend year over year. And when you think about kind of this broad look at the overall increase of spend, and this is obviously not just Google, you know, Meta, Microsoft, Amazon, Apple is in there, etc. and others. This is everybody. But presenting a pretty significant number of spend from 2023 to 2024 in terms of CapEx growth. Their model has this around almost $200 billion in CapEx combined for everybody, roughly, let's see, $172 before they put Amazon in, coming up from $120 billion in 2023. So, yes, big, big numbers. But everybody wants to talk about how much they're spending on this infrastructure and correlate this line between I'm spending, you know, this much in CapEx. And interestingly, if you just do the math, right, Microsoft is spending more in annual CapEx than TSMC is in foundries. So, you know, fascinating. But the overall, or TSMC in CapEx, the overall line trend is connecting this to we're investing in our moat, in our differentiation, because we believe that is in the infrastructure. So CapEx, broad trend, and everybody wanting to talk about this to the street. What's your take of this new sort of trendy thing to talk about CapEx now in the last quarter? I don't know, maybe a little bit more.
I am a deep tech semiconductor professional, and I am all for CapEx. Spend, spend, baby, spend.
CapEx to the moon, to the moon.
To the moon. See, it's just like crypto, to the moon.
On GPUs.
That's my bias. Let me state my bias up front. I'm all for it. Spend like drunken sailors on leave. I'm all for it. These are big numbers. Like you pointed out, this is, you know, AWS's CapEx for data centers is greater than TSMC's, which is staggering because those mm-hmm. are big numbers already.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's good. Let's enjoy it while it lasts. It cannot be sustainable. We can't keep going at this pace.
Right.
And the question is, how long does it last? And what actually deflates it? Right. And I think there's two. Well, all right. Let's get to the deflationary side of it later. But I think the main thing right now is, I mean, everybody is in a panic or near panic or high state of alarm. That they don't want to be, that there's some kind of arms race going on. There's clearly gains to be had for scale, right? Most AI researchers I listen to or talk to say that the last year has proven out that there are the bigger you can build your model, the better the model can be.
Right.
But we're already past the point where, you know, only a tiny handful of companies can afford to build those big, big models. And they're going to keep spending, right? I think they all feel the need to keep this going, at least for the time being. And that's great. It's great for, you know, we semiconductors could use a new bubble to boost revenue for a while.
So the part that gets kind of weird for me, because we see these CapEx estimates, but to your point about how long it can sustain, I think the question is, so okay, backing up, companies are being rewarded by investors for CapEx spending, right? For their increased R&D. Let's just put it bucket there, right? They believe that will lead to, like I said, differentiation and a moat. But the numbers we're talking about, I guess what I haven't seen is how do you connect that to revenue growth? I mean, if you're talking a company increasing their CapEx by $20 billion, $15 billion, like we're acknowledging the cost of compute is extremely expensive. The training and run these models, very expensive. Okay, you got to make that money up. And so I think the big question is, we agree that this money needs to be spent, but I think it's very unclear how they recoup those costs and monetize their AI. And that was actually a question that came up in Meta's earnings, Microsoft's earnings, everybody's. It's like, how are you going to monetize these things? Where will we see increased in revenue growth directly tied to this, not just you adding new customers and yada, yada, yada. And so I know we're early, but I get a little bit weary when we're talking about this kind of numbers and we don't actually know, right, the revenue model to monetize this yet.
Yeah, I mean, that's been my theme for a while now, is a lot of this is very sort of aspirational. We don't have clear consumer use cases for AI. Right. Generative AI is fun, but I think there's been data leaking out this week that retention on some of those big Gen AI platforms is not great. People sign up, they use it a little bit, and then unless they're in a fairly narrow scope of work, they don't come back to it. It's a nice toy to have. So it's, you know, people coding, it seems to be helpful for that, but not a cure-all, but it's helpful. People writing marketing copy. Okay, fantastic. And kids writing essays and college applications, right? That seems to be the market for the time being. There's clearly more stuff on the way. There seems to be a lot of interesting work around, I think the next wave is around images, even more advanced than what we've seen so far. And of course, video is looming out there somewhere on the horizon, right? Generative video will be very, very powerful. Okay, I obviously am somewhat skeptical about where it is now, but I am still fairly upbeat that there's more to come. I'm a little surprised it's taken this long, and that gives me some pause. But I still think there is more stuff, more interesting applications waiting to be created. Sure. We're just not quite there yet.
And you know, back to the old adage, you got to spend money to make money. I get it. It's just that, I know you and I, we've looked at companies' CapExes for a long time. Like, we're seeing insane numbers of CapEx now. Like, back to the times where it was like $9 billion, $15 billion, Intel would spend $10 billion on a foundry, TSMC spending 32, you know, to 35. They shrunk that number it started to get really crazy just thinking about foundries. Like, I remember back in the day when you're like, oh man, dude, to build a foundry, $12 billion? That's insane. And now we're talking about a company spending $50 billion a year in cloud CapEx. Like, a year. Like, it's just, so I get it. Spend money to make money. These are just like insane numbers. And again, to the point that I made, is like, this is coming up pretty significantly over 2023. So like, this is companies saying, my 2023 CapEx revenues were so off, I need to spend, you know, $8, $10, $15 billion more in order to get me where I want to be competitively. So this is, like I said, insane numbers that we're talking about at a CapEx level.
Yeah, these are very big numbers. And I think some of it we can sort of categorizes ketchup, right?
Yes.
Amazon didn't have generative AI. They're going to have something in 6 months, whenever, soon, right? Google, I think, has been spending very consistently, and they've, I think, accelerated their CapEx, but again, they've been spending a lot for a long time on this. And, you know, Microsoft is like, everybody's got these big CapEx numbers. Hold my beer. I'm going to go spend $150 billion and build
a chip.
Was it Stargate, computer. Their supercomputer?
Yeah, a supercomputer.
Right? Stargate, right?
Yep.
So, but, and I think it's important to remember that some of that is, needs to be, you know, some of that is being built as capacity for other people to use.
Yes.
Right? Amazon, Azure, AWS are going to build this for their customers, and the assumption that their customers are going to use this. And I think most corporates I talk to, I think you talk to, are doing something. We can debate how much of that is just testing. There's clearly signs that we're moving a little bit beyond testing into putting systems into production. But again, it's mostly like chatbots and sort of labor reduction things. It's not totally clear how many companies are really boosting revenue from this.
Right. And like I said,
I think one of the...
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I come back to the point that you made, which was we're optimistic that more will come. And I do think the investments they make today in, again, custom compute and or software differentiation, platform differentiation, being able to do this at cost at lower or compute at lower cost, whatever they're investing in, we need to get over this hump so that come out the other end is what people can build upon, right? Because we're building new infrastructure for the AI era. So I agree with that. So I know this has to happen to get there. It's just, it just gets weird. Like, I just keep coming back to like, man, I mean, we've never seen big tech spend this in CapEx before.
Oh, I was about to say, hey, 1999 called it. It wants its business model back. Because I think we have seen this. This looks a lot to me like the fiber build in the 90s, right? I don't know if you remember
in
that
concept,
but part
but
of the .com.
But the price is not as high.
I don't know. I have to look back. I think inflation adjusted we're it's probably more now. It's definitely much more concentrated on a smaller number of companies. But there are some crazy big fiber builds in the late 90s. I remember I worked on one project where the whole assumption was we're going to build this big fiber system. I think it was next to like railroad right of ways. And we have a deal, like it was basically a railroad company spun off its real estate, and they're going to put fiber along these lines. And the whole model was built on the assumption that they were going to crush prices by 90%. Right? Because at that point there was so much fiber being added that prices were collapsing everywhere. And so they're like, okay, we're going to build that into our model. Like, we're not going to be surprised by it. We're actually going to drive a 90% price reduction in our market, which even in like 1999 or 2000, when I was doing that, seemed like not the best idea.
Right. Right.
Right. And I think so that, but if then you fast forward a few years and suddenly the world has lots of cheap fiber, and that was a good thing, right? That then allowed companies like Google to exist because they could serve people very quickly. And all these other business models were built on top of that. And so I don't think we're going to end up there, but that's one possibility. We just end up with all these massive data centers. I think the difference, though, is that data centers obsolete themselves faster than fiber did. Fiber can have a long life. You can extend it. These servers, the CapEx, a lot of the CapEx is obsolete after 2-3 years.
Exactly. And that's the big difference. And that's why I think, you know, because again, you lay your fiber, you've got your fiber. This is, you know, next year, perhaps the GPUs, the CPUs, the accelerators are outdated and more efficient, less expensive ones show up. So you just kind of keep refreshing that infrastructure. So that's why I think it stays healthy, but I agree with you. So, but now again, to go back to something that we've locked, any long-term listener of our podcast has talked about, which is how does this increase in CapEx drive growth for the semiconductor industry? And so we've got, you know, some a range of forecasts, but I'll just share some of these. also from Morgan Stanley, looking at, you know, today roughly, call it, I'll just say because we're ballparking it, between $50 and $60 billion of data center infrastructure is silicon content. They have that number going to $152 billion in 2030. And if you just look at what they're estimating as the CapEx spend to silicon, it's roughly 35 to 36%. Of that infrastructure going onto the silicon side, just by the numbers of content for semis. So, you know, I say that to say this is the reason why everybody doing semiconductor infrastructure is happy, because they're like, oh, we're going to be continuing to increase how many GPUs, how many CPUs, how many network infrastructure, how much whatever, right? Accelerators. That number is on a relative increase to this CapEx spend. Again, how long? Don't know. You're right. Turnover is going to keep to some degree sustainable, but that number, right, the silicon industry's TAM now is growing on the back of obviously this CapEx spend. So I think it's important, right, as we think about all this opportunity. But this addresses or goes back to some of those initial conversations we were having, which is lots of upside, lots of up to the right for a lot of semiconductor companies, because this is a massive TAM expansion, right? Going from 50 to 152. So another $100 billion being spent over the course of the next 5 to 6 years. That's not trivial. That's a lot of money grabbing for a lot of folks in semis to start going after.
I'm so terrified. When you lay it out like that, I'm like, oh my God, there is the I'm fast forwarding to like the 2028 inventory overhang that this is going to all lead to. It's going to be so brutal. But yeah, you're right. Semiconductors are cyclical. I just have to learn to live with that and enjoy the moment, because the next few years are going to be good for many companies. Probably more broadly than just NVIDIA and a handful of memory companies. I think it expands, but let's enjoy it while it lasts, because it's going to be a big run.
Yeah, but go ahead.
I was going to say partly though what concerns me about all this is, if you go back to what we were talking about a minute ago about the consumer applications, all of us in the industry are taking it on faith that these big spenders know what they're doing, and that worries me a little bit.
Right.
And I don't mean to, you know, disparage them directly, but there is an element of faith here that we're all sort of assuming that Microsoft and OpenAI and a few others, you know, have some big vision, and they know that we can. Their confidence in achieving some of these bigger targets is based on stuff we don't know about, but hard facts that we don't know about. They've modeled it out, and they can actually see it.
Right.
But then they come up and they talk about AGI, and I get a little nervous. Like, is that really the goal we're headed for here? Because that seems very, very remote. Artificial general intelligence, like consciousness. I don't know if that's achievable. And so I'm hoping that there's some intermediate step, which is sort of much more prosaic, which we can just call, you know, revenue. Useful applications. I'd be happy if we had that. Like,
yeah.
The you know, AGI and the sentient conscious computer, I can wait for that. That one, we can take our time getting there, but I'm hoping there's something before we get there that is interesting and compelling. But we're assuming that a couple big companies have some clear, tangible path to this.
Yeah.
And we haven't actually seen any of that. So
to use another spin on this, right? I'm assuming a field of dreams situation. if we build it, they will come. But what's intriguing to me is, because I don't, like, I've been having a range of conversations with, you know, whatever you want to talk about, people who think, you know, 15, 20 years in the future. So let's just call them sci-fi futurists, whatever. But what those conversations got me thinking about is, and this then speaks to some points that you made about, you know, Humane AI Pin, and I've been recently playing around with the rabbit, is what one would hope that after this Field of Dreams situation, after the field is made and these people have built their giant infrastructures of data, that we're not just going to see, you know, a revamp of the experience of our existing devices, so our existing smartphones, our existing PCs, but new things like AI wearables, like AR glasses, like automobiles, like robotics, like that new whatever plethora of additional AI driven hardware or AI powered hardware adds another dynamic that we don't have today. You got more devices out there doing heavy compute, some at the edge, some in the cloud, 100%. A lot of silicon content going into all these things we're talking about. But to me, that's the question of this new foundation, right? Build this infrastructure. Will we see more, like, new innovation, more of these bigger compute or AI-first type of hardware things, which, again, I'm just going to throw, you know, autonomous cars into that. Clearly, we would believe robots would have an element of that. They'd need to be smart. That to me, then, if that happens, if I'm even remotely right that all of these dots are connected, I think it presents this, like, why all of this might increase, and then to some degree, why just the industry as it grows probably won't shrink again. Will stay at some level of new growth, if that makes sense, both in hyperscalers and in silicon content per, you know, whatever we want to say, per car increasing, per robot, which we don't have yet, per AI wearable, if that's glasses or a pin or something else, right? So we've got more compute hardware than we do today that requires all of this intelligence, if that made sense.
So I'm with you. Although I have this rule of thumb is whenever, I guess it depends on the time frame and the context we're talking about. So I have this rule of thumb that if ever I'm in an investor conversation and the thesis boils down to, oh, there's a secular demand trend underpinning all of this, the argument, you've lost the argument, right? Because the time frames we're talking about, secular trends and technology can take much longer than we expect.
Yep.
And so I absolutely agree. We're all getting more digital stuff in our life. Robots are coming, autonomous cars, whatever. I believe it. It's all going to happen. But some of it could take a very long time.
Yeah, very long time.
Right? And so I get a little bit cautious when, like, but let me put it a different way, is I actually think that there are some pretty healthy near-term demand drivers that
yes,
are
agree
that are that that will help out. So I don't think it's all doom and gloom, but I think it's the next year or so we need to start really seeing some more product type things. And so I'm fairly confident about generative imaging and generative video. I think that's coming in the next year. I think there will be some pretty interesting things in robotics coming soon. And I think some of the industrial stuff is starting to get interesting. You know, things like drug discovery, I think that's a real, there's some real progress being made. That's going to take a little bit longer. But, like, I think there's enough of those sort of real things out there that will keep this going.
Yeah. So, but there again, right? Okay, so that was another point I wanted to mention. So how do we think about, I think we all agree, broadly, TAM growth, category growth, yes, right now there's a reward for that investment. How patient is the market going to be? Like, is this a, like, again, let's put the investor hat back on. Is this something where fruit needs to be seen in the next 2 years before people are like, okay, stop spending so much money, you're not monetizing it? Or is there a grace period even longer because of some of the hype and expectations around AI?
Oh, no. I mean, this is Wall Street we're talking about. They're already running out of patience. They ran out of patience yesterday.
Yesterday.
Right. I mean, right. So, or more specifically, ran out of patience whenever Facebook reported. It was last Thursday, I think. Today's April 29th. Facebook reported last week. And the stock market did not like its results, in large part because they said, we're going to keep spending heavily on CapEx for AI.
Right.
And that's, I think the street liked that. It's a better story than we're going to spend heavily on the metaverse. But it doesn't sort of change the... Facebook is spending a lot of money. Like, what'd they say, $33 to $37 billion in CapEx, which for them is a lot. It's, you know, it's a pretty heavy investment. And they don't have great answers when you say, what are you going to do with that, Mark?
Right.
He doesn't have great answers. Like, so, you know, he and again, we're sort of taking on faith that he knows what he's doing, but when he's actually pushed to say, what are we going to do with this? His answers aren't particularly compelling. So that is a little concerning. But again, I'm tempted to have faith in him more than some of the others. And of course, the other big unknown is, like, where's Apple in all this? Like, well, I guess we have WWDC coming up next month, June.
Yeah.
So I think most people assume they're going to talk about AI a lot, and so we'll see. You know, the concern there is that everyone has very high expectations for Apple.
Right.
And I think it's a little tougher for them to deliver on this front because this is so new to everybody.
Right.
Hopefully they'll have some interesting use cases. I'm a little worried because when it comes to Apple and software, they're not quite as, like, the wow factor is not quite there for their software stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you see a new iPhone right away, you know, it's amazing. Like, they have something new. It's exciting when the iPhone first came out, at least. With software, it takes them a while to get going. Like, I've been using Apple Maps a lot lately, and it's fantastic, right? But I remember when it first launched, it was terrible. Like, and people made fun of it, and it had all kinds of problems. And now I would argue it's better than Google Maps.
In the Bay Area.
But it took them many, many years to get there.
In the Bay Area.
Yeah.
Other parts of the world and country, perhaps not so much. In fact, I couldn't even use it in Costa Rica. It was, it didn't even try. No, but I agree with you. I agree with you. But again, back to this point, because I wanted to get here too in this conversation, it feels like, and I have no idea if Apple's going to do this, but it feels like on their earnings this Thursday, people want to hear them say something about an increase in CapEx because they want to know, like, hey, look, man, you can't keep spending $9 to $10 billion a year and go do all these wonderful things in AI. It is expensive. You're going to need GPUs. You're going to need blah, 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 blah. So they're wanting to see that. And then the hope is that that's the first fruits of their, you know, strategy, that they're willing to increase, you know, CapEx. But again, I have no idea. But back to the CapEx point, people are like, hopefully Apple, like, spends more money because this is not expensive. And then that'll tell us that they're doing something in AI.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Like, as much as Facebook got beat up for their CapEx increase, Microsoft and Google got rewarded for it.
They did, yeah.
They increased CapEx, and the street seemed to love that. But again, that goes back to the assumption that everyone assumes that Satya knows what he's doing with those billions, and Sundar, for that, right? Both companies, I think Google, it's a little bit clearer what they're doing with it. TPUs make a lot of sense. Those are doing well. The OpenAI Microsoft stuff, I think, is still, we're just taking their word for it.
Yeah. Field of dreams, like I said, you know.
Yeah.
We need to see these platforms. But, you know, again, to go back to this versus Meta, and again, this just comes back to everybody's philosophy when it comes to how they're innovating, buying, developing their own compute. You know, Facebook's product, the product in which we will see them use AI, is very different than, like, the product of Azure and GCP, which are essentially true compute platforms. These are things people will build a new classification of apps and services and whatever on top of. So I think I can see why this happened to Meta a little bit different when you're talking about a compute platform that people will build on. For Apple, though, again, it comes back to the same thing. What they're going to say is, and this comes back to, like, conversations we've had about Qualcomm and others, what they're going to say is, okay, you're going to increase your CapEx, but what does that mean? Are you going to sell more devices, right, as a part of that, right? Are you going to sell more hardware as a part of more Macs, more tablets, more Vision Pros, whatever, because of your AI strategy? That we don't know. That will take a lot longer to pan out. But again, it comes back to the product, right? And I think that's the distinction between who's rewarded for CapEx and who's getting a little bit more skepticism. In my view.
Yeah, I think that's. Yeah, I think that's about right. I think some of these companies have leeway to spend a lot more, but
yeah,
we're starting to, I think the main thing I take away from all this is that the street is starting to pay attention, where a year ago they were like, they didn't care. And now everyone's like starting to ask the tougher questions about what's the return on this big investment?
Yeah. So in the bigger sort of picture here in terms of timelines, is it unreasonable to say that, I guess this is just even for my own clarity of thinking, that we're it'll be very hard to predict the end kind of use cases revenue until more of this infrastructure is built? Or is it, again, to the fiber point, right? You got to lay it, then people can build on top of it, which to me would push the timeline out. I struggle with the timelines. Obviously, if we could predict timelines, we'd all be much more wealthier and successful than we are. But that to me is sort of the root of this, right? Is how much of this can happen in parallel when, again, we're still not seeing a landslide of development and use cases and revenue streams tied to businesses or even consumers on top of existing infrastructure, which you'd think is relatively compelling, just looking at Claude, GPT, some of those things right now.
Yeah, I think it's a fair point, right? Because you think about some of the things I was talking about, this multimodal large language, or large vision models, yeah, image models. Those must be incredibly computationally expensive.
Like, yes.
Just to build a model that can actually generate video must be huge. And it's going to cost a lot of money to develop that. I think, I guess there's two ways to think about this. One is, we have this, you sort of pointed to a chicken and egg problem. We can't really have it until the infrastructure is in place. But the infrastructure is not in place, can't be in place until we have the apps that will justify making the investment. The flip side of that is that there are big gains to people who can make those bets right now if they pay off, which could, in theory, give someone like OpenAI just this huge, massive advantage. Like, they're the first ones to do this because they're the only ones who could afford to build or to rent out that much Azure capacity.
Yeah.
And I don't think either of those are great. Like, to have all of innovation dependent on a small number of companies.
Yeah. I mean, I think, again, right, it comes back to, will there be a like a turning point in the end application side, again, for businesses or consumers, where there's just sort of an inflection and we're like, okay, that was the moment. Because, you know, we can point back to this with certain things in the journey of AI. You know, we can point back to transformers. We can obviously point back to GPT, all enabled by increase of compute. But those were those sort of inflection moments that took us one step further. And I just wonder if it's like, yeah, it's going to happen really quick all at once, or this is still, I mean, I tend to want to be like you, which is say all this stuff's just going to take way longer than anybody realizes. But at the same time, I think you could argue some inflection point could happen and it's like a whole nother Cambrian explosion of things, but these things are more sustainable revenue, business model, you know, tied to end market value than before, because again, there is so much compute infrastructure that was built. So I go back and forth, but I think to me, that's the most interesting thing to watch. Like, are we seeing stagnation or are we seeing, you know, a potential inflection point somewhere?
Well, I think there's another important dimension to this. I mentioned at the start, which is the deflationary side of all this, right? Right now, building these massive models is very expensive because the compute is so expensive, but I think there's a lot of forces that are coming into play that will decrease those costs, right? Certainly on the inference side, I think the more I dig into it, the more I'm convinced that we're going to see very heterogeneous inference solutions, both in the cloud and on the edge, right? I think we're going to see a lot more edge inference from Qualcomm and eventually AMD and Intel. That's gonna lower the sort of the CapEx hit to the hyperscalers, because you and I are going to be paying for that CapEx.
Right.
You're welcome. But I also think in the cloud inference is going to be, again, very heterogeneous. I think right? Because once you start seeing these, how the cost of these NVIDIA systems for doing training, for doing inference, they're like CPU starts to look interesting, right? It's woefully less performant than doing inference on a great NVIDIA GPU, but if it costs like 1/10, 1/20 as much, then let's do it that way, right? It's just it's a budget, right? It costs, you know, inference is 1,000 times cheaper or 1,000 times more performant on GPU, but the GPU costs 1,001 times more than the CPU. We're going to do it on CPU. So I think and that's going to then force NVIDIA to become to change its pricing. Like those deflationary effects do exist, and I think they will become more pronounced, which is not great for this is what's going to lead to my 2028 inventory overhang, but it's probably what is, I mean, because like I said, that's what happened with the fiber build, right? The fiber build in 2001 crashed, right, and then we had all this cheap fiber. That's and right. I think we're going to see something like that sort of percolate up, but it won't be because there's too many GPUs out there. It would just be because other solutions, we figured out how to do other solutions. We've gotten, we've started using shrunk down models that are just as performant, and so we don't need, agreed, we can run it all on CPU, that kind of thing. And I think that's a really important force.
Right, agreed. And I think that's why the most important element of this to watch will be what drives cost downs, whether it's some form of excessive inventory or it's some form of, like you said, because part of me also wonders, I know we don't quite, well, we could figure this number out, but it would be a little bit trickier. But for example, how much of this silicon cost is the hyperscalers making, you know, their own custom silicon, and is perhaps a grand ambition that those bits, those CPUs they do on ARM, those, you know, accelerators they do, you know, maybe even some version of a GPU, is designed to bring those costs down, to be the thing that kind of helps provide an alternative in cost of compute and do it lower. And so I wonder kind of how much they're seeing that as an opportunity over time, not immediate, but over time relative to their custom efforts. But I agree with you in general, every prior historical cycle of every major industrial revolution or industrial industry build out, cost decrease was the thing that created that innovation and Cambrian explosion. So hopefully it's not a full crash, but just like you said, maybe we just figured out how to do it more efficient and cheaper. But yeah, the cost will be the driver.
Yep, I agree.
Yep.
And I think that's actually the right way to think about it. The right way to think about it is, at some point, there's going to be a big build out. It's going to get, at some point it will go into excess. I don't know if that's tomorrow or 5 years from now. At some point it will go into excess, and then it will all come crashing down, and we'll have a couple ugly quarters, and NVIDIA stock will contract a whole bunch, and then we're off to the races, right? That's Jevons paradox. Suddenly all those costs come down, and everybody, every, you know, 15-year-old in her garage can build a LLM on their own.
A bot, a robot, a car, whatever. But no, agreed. Okay. So obviously, as we've hopefully shared, some of the signposts to look for A, valuing companies, B, when we might see a explosion of opportunities and innovation on the back of a decrease of cost to compute. So we'll see fun things to talk about as we reflect and observe. I think it's definitely not in the next couple of years, but sometime after 2025-ish, perhaps. all right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for, again, all the notes you send us, even the comments that some of you are leaving on our YouTube channel, because we do post them there in case you want to see my face and Jay's face talk about these things as well. It's on the circuit in YouTube. But we appreciate all of that. Like, subscribe, share on social media, all of that good stuff. It helps us out, and keep the questions coming on other topics you guys want us to talk about. So we look forward to talking with you again on the next episode. Talk to you later.
Thank you, everybody.